This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you.
Thank you. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Security Framework Drafting Team meeting on the 29th of September, 2016. Today we have Alan Willis and Mick Sherry, who will be leading the call. And the agenda is to review the draft that has been provided and by PSWG and the registry group. So, Alan, I'd like to start with the Appendix D. This is the newest addition to the draft, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Could you start with this?
Sure. So, as promised last week, when we were considering Annex B and the whole concept behind Annex B was trying to give an idea of the processes that, or should I say, the written procedures and policies that are already in place with other registries. We decided that it was probably best to go on a much higher level, and that is provide a listing of the current registries, and then from there, because it is a requirement of the registry agreements that we have publicly available registration terms and conditions, that we would then, people can find it from that listing. So that is what in effect is. It's just a link to the ICANN listing itself. Actually, just on that point, Jim Galvin there just sent an email through just querying, because it is a particular link that we're using there, as you can see, there's a date on that. So we might look into getting a non-date specific link in there, but that's something we can work on. But the second half is kind of the more meaty part of this, and it was just purely to ensure that it was, again, a high enough level to ensure that all types of registries are covered in this, but also the fact, in the spirit of the document as being a framework document, a voluntary framework document, that it is not going to, that one terms and conditions or one acceptable use policy is not going to be the Rosetta Stone for anybody else, that it is getting very clearly across that one registry, run registry's policies are not necessarily representative of that of another and not necessarily directly comparable to that. So there's a little bit of disclaimer going on in that, but at the same time, again, providing that all-important link that if you want to see a particular registry, you'll be able to find it through that. So it was a very straightforward Annex B. Generally speaking, I think there's a lot of agreement from the registry side that this seems to be the way to go, and I'd be glad to see other comments or queries on it.
Any comments? Questions?
Hi, it's Nick Shorey here.
Hi, Nick.
Can everyone hear me okay? Good.
Yes, hi,
Alan. So thanks very much for sharing the Annex B. Unfortunately, sort of due to timings and things, we haven't had the opportunity to take this part back in into full discussion within the GAC and the PSWG subgroup yet. So again, it's I know we keep sort of talking about and worrying about the timelines that are sort of drifting on this, but I think we're all sort of the same mind. It's actually, you know, things are slow, but it's better to get it right. So we will take this back and have a fuller discussion in the PSWG and see if there's any tweaks. You know, obviously you mentioned sort of the dating element there. We'll see if there's anything else that we might need to tweak or feel maybe added into it. But I certainly agree with the principle that trying, you know, let's keep this sort of broad and inclusive, and that you're certainly on the right tracks.
Great. Thank you very much, Nick.
Krista has her hand up. Go ahead, Krista.
Thanks, Dennis, and everybody. It's Krista Papik from staff. Nick, just a follow-up question for you. Understanding you need to, you know, go back to the bigger group and discuss this. I just wondered if the principle that Alan sort of articulated about linking back to registry sites where each of the accessible use policies could be accessed, if that made sense on behalf of the PSWG, just if that made sense, is something that when you do go back and talk to them, you know, you're able to, you know, share sort of where the registries are coming from. I'm just trying to find a way to see where the gaps are so we can kind of try to focus on those.
Sorry, Chris, I missed a bit of that. You were breaking up slightly. You should be able to sort of just cover that again.
Sure. Sorry about that. Let me try again. I guess I was just trying to, I'm asking if sort of the principle about how to access the acceptable use policies from the framework that that Alan just shared, if that makes sense, you know, from your perspective, or if that's something you think is going to be problematic with the PSWG. I mean, to me, it seems very reasonable, but I don't know exactly where the PSWG is coming from. And if you do think that's going to be an issue, then maybe we should talk about it. And if not, then maybe we should just move on to, you know, other items where we think there might be gaps between registry's view and the PSWG's view.
Yeah, I think in principle, it seems a sensible starting point. But obviously, you know, do we think this is detailed enough, you know, and all that kind of stuff? Yeah, we'll have to take that back to the PSWG, you know, in the GAC just to top and tail it. But yeah, in terms of this sort of, you know, the approach, yeah, it seems a sensible starting point to me, I think.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Krista. Any other comments on this Appendix B? If not, I'd like to go back to our other document. Let's see. PSWG introduced the larger document here to see if anybody has comment on this now. I know that last week when we looked at this, it just came up, so people didn't have time to read it. So now you should have had time to read it. So any comments and feedback?
Janice, if you don't mind, I can get the ball rolling here. It's Alan Woods from
Reuters. Yes, go ahead, Alan.
Okay, so I think the best way to put this is that when we were waiting for this update from the PSWG, so I'm looking at the update that begins on page 21, I believe. Of course I can scroll to that because I have access, don't I? And I'll go to that. Basically, we were all, the registries were wondering how it would be phrased. It was, in principle, considered to be an interesting way of moving forward, and we wanted to see the substance of what was behind that. Now, having seen the insertion, and I appreciate that it is a brief insertion, but the one issue may be in that this would have been a very specific, a very detail-oriented insertion that is needed, as opposed to something that is a bit more light. So with that in mind, people have had comments on that. Certain members of the registry grouping have had comments and had some reservations on that. And I think these are the people that are probably best to discuss that. And I think we should open it up to those people who have those issues so that we can share with the entire group and have a good discussion back and forth and see, you know, is there what's the sticking points, and more importantly, what can we do to move past it, and is there any changes? So I would like to suggest, and I'm not jumping in as chair of this meeting, but just I would like to suggest that opening it up to those people who have specific reservations about it, and let's just talk them out.
Maxim, go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba for the record. I'd like to talk about sinkholing, which is mentioned in this document. I think we need to define the procedures and the actors and the obligations before we agree that we are happy to apply sinkholing, whatever it is. The reason to think so is that not all stories where sinkholing and I can together ended up well. Just to be short, it's the situation with cctld.kz and one big manufacturer of phones and tablets from Los Angeles, and situation where things got out of control of the registry, where the third party, which was introduced by ICANN, just started doing bit wild and crazy things in the zone file, and basically without any, I'd say, attempts of feedback from the CCTLD went nowhere. So we need to know, given that the parties are, I'd say, the same, we need to know procedures before we agree that we will be happy to, for example, redirect traffic or allow unknown third parties to do anything they want in our zone files, for which we might be responsible in our jurisdictions, is the first point. And the second is about the damage to internet infrastructure. I think we need to limit this term a bit, because in current reading, basically registries will have to respond to any damage, to any bit of internet infrastructure. And it means any ISPs, bits of infrastructure like routers, switches, maybe hosting companies' equipment, maybe even contents of those hosting servers, maybe even, I'd say, contents of private databases such as social networks. And we need to be responsible for what's in our control, because any moment of time, some network is under attack over the internet. And we cannot be responsible for that and to hold the line 24 hours a day to say basically, no, we cannot do anything about it. So we need some demarcation points, because like in ISP or telco world, there are things called demarcation points where your responsibility ends. Thanks.
Brian?
This is Brian Zimbalik with the Public Interest Registry. The third category gives me some real heartburn. The use of domain names for furtherance of non-life-threatening crimes. I mean, it's a very broad category. It covers anything from potentially trademark infringement to copyright infringement to, you know, this, that, and the other. What's illegal, what's a crime in one jurisdiction may not be a crime in another jurisdiction. And if it's a non-life-threatening crime, then I don't see it as a actual security threat at all. I think that it should be removed from the document. I think that if it's a non-life-threatening crime, the appropriate means to address it is through a court order.
Okay. Frank?
Yeah, so I wanted to pile on to what Maxim said a little bit. One thing that I think is missing from the document overall is I think it could benefit from an entire section on appropriate due diligence for a registry before they take action. Maxim highlighted one case, but there's others that we're concerned about, right? You start talking about phishing and farming, it's pretty easy to do a phishing run and put a URL in there that you'd like to get taken down. So I think registries need to perform some due diligence there. I think registries also need to perform a due diligence for potential name servers that may be located within a domain. I might have some malware or something using something in a domain. I may delete it. There may be name servers in that to affect another domain. You actually kind of have to map out the entire transit of trust and looking at every domain and every name server that it calls and every name server that depends on, and what dependencies are you going to break in there. I don't know what the right answer is, but I know I've got a couple of, I think checking the transitive trust between domains, understanding dependencies with name servers, making sure it's not a false flag or false positive action trying to trigger a deletion, in addition to the points Maxim brought up, I think are really good in terms of what action you take and what the implications are there with sinkholing or other techniques. But I think the document would benefit heavily from it. It could be a whole top-level section on that.
Thank you, Frank. Sean, you're on.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, for me, the concern I saw was that when we began this framework discussion, it was focused on technical abuse, phishing, malware, botnets, and farming. And in time, as we've expanded this, I see an expansion of scope. And so some of these, for example, and I think Brian already talked to this, non-life-threatening crime, but even more broader items like threats to critical infrastructure, where we're no longer speaking about anything related to the Internet, but chemical plants, for example. I have some concern that as we've strayed, to me it feels a bit away from the original mission. We're getting into areas that's going to be much more difficult to address in this forum for this framework.
Jim, go ahead. Jim Galvin?
Thank you, Jim Galvin. Yes, thank you, Jim Galvin, for the transcript. My suggestion for this third category, I know that I have, at least in the registry group, been pretty supportive of this idea of this three category and having some timelines, but having seen the words that are here, I like the first category, 24 hours. The second category, other folks have commented on this interesting distinction between Internet infrastructure and critical infrastructure. The fact that that is written that way does cause one to want to ask the question, what's the distinction between Internet and critical? Because I agree with others. I prefer that we focus really only on Internet infrastructure here. Everything else kind of falls into a different category, which is, quite subjective. Our role really is only on the Internet. So that's an interesting clarification to get, and I would prefer that it be limited to just threats to, our critical Internet infrastructure is the way that I would phrase it. In my mind, the kinds of things that fall into that category, just to be very clear, are things like botnets, command and control systems, would fall into that category. And as the APWG group has shown us year over year, one of the most critical things that we can do on behalf of the Internet is, the uptime of those kinds of systems is decreasing, and, continuing to move in that direction is obviously a feature. For the third item there, I kind of always had imagined the third item as being kind of an other catch-all, whatever else is there, and I never imagined that there would be a timeline on that. I'd rather just have a category three, which is everything else falls into this, and, we'll deal with it according to whatever other externalities may apply, but, in the fullness of time, so to speak, court orders would fit in there, and they might have a timeline associated with them, and any other complaint falls into there, and it just becomes part of your day job to deal with it. So I'd rather see no timeline on the third thing and just have it be a catch-all for everything else falls in here. If it's not clearly called out as something which we want to address, just slot it down here, and it'll get dealt with according to whatever's appropriate for whatever event it is, which will evolve and be decided on a case-by-case basis. Thanks.
Nick, maybe you'd like to address that, clarify what...
Yeah, thanks. I see Chris has also got his hand up. Should we have Chris first, mm-hmm. and then I'll just come back with some comments?
Go ahead, Chris.
This is Chris Klein with VeriSign, and I'm interested to know, especially in this third category, how do these best practices, how do they either conflict or coincide with involving review of content? And I can't state a position that it is not the content police, so that's a concern with this catch-all category here.
Okay. Nick, would you like to speak now?
And I should say, what is the differentiation here?
I'm sorry. Chris, go ahead. Continue.
And I should say, what is the differentiation? Because, you know, this best practices and Spec 11, from our knowledge is that it doesn't address content, or we're not supposed to scan for content.
Right. Nick, I think you can go ahead now.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you, Maxim, Brian, Frank, Sean, Jim, and Chris for your comments. Very, very helpful. It seems to me that there's some very useful points regarding the specific terminology that we've included here in the three categories. I think it seems to me there's a general recognition that there's a benefit and advantage in being a bit sort of clearer about the separation of certain types of threats that we're talking about. So the categorization of that is helpful. However, maybe there is some sort of work that could be done around the specific terminology. Pick up on Jim's point. Talking about what do we mean? What's the difference between internet infrastructure and critical internet infrastructure? So those are some worthwhile things that we can take back, think about, and maybe we can sort of either articulate them more clearly to yourselves what we're talking about with this language, or maybe we can even refine this language a bit better to state this more clearly. There were some comments around the third category being a bit of a catch-all, and but maybe being a bit too broad. I do recall way back we did seek to specify, and it is articulated sort of elsewhere, sort of in ICANN documentation, around the types of threats that we're talking about here, in terms of the sort of botnets, all that kind of stuff. And that is the intent in terms of the content. The reason for a public safety body requesting some action would be articulated in any such request to a registry operator. I think in terms of the time frames, I know someone did mention, was it Jim? Yeah, I think you mentioned about the time frame of Category 3 saying it's a catch-all, and so we probably don't need to have a timeline. I do recall from one of the previous calls we had a good few weeks back, there was some discussion actually about what do we mean by response. And the PSWG are also sort of looking at this and looking if we can provide you something that will answer that query about what do we mean by time response. I know someone said, an automated email is a response. So we're working on that, and I think we're going to provide that very soon. If Bobby hasn't already, I'm not sure he has. I think when we get this text, that might help to sort of support the time frame that we're talking about here. I think it is good to have some ambition about how quickly we should be responding to a particular threat, but being mindful of the different approaches that individual businesses take. But I would say having a time frame is a good thing. But we can probably improve this document by being clear about the type of response within that certain time frame.
Thank you. Krista, did you want to speak?
Thanks, Dennis. It's Krista Papik from ICANN staff. Just to address, I think it was Chris's comments or questions around content and this document and Specification 11. So just, kind of as a reminder to everybody, this framework is separate. It's a voluntary best practices framework. It's not contractual. So that's the first thing. The second thing is there is contract language in specification 11 that relates to security threats, but that is separate from this. That language is different from what this document is. Thirdly, as far as ICANN and content, again, this is a best practices document for registries to use for addressing security threats. It's not, while we're helping facilitate the drafting of this and the community input because of an NGPC resolution, it's not ICANN regulating content. We are still not in the content business. That has not changed. I assume that you guys registries come across content-related issues in your day-to-day business, regardless of what ICANN is or whatever, maybe from a court order or some other mechanism. And so I think this would fall more towards those types of categories rather than ICANN, the entity being involved in content.
Thank you. Alan, you're up next.
Great, thank you. It's Alan with Whiteside Registry. Speaking in a personal capacity, not necessarily as co-chair on this. Just, I suppose, quickly to respond to Chris there, and I appreciate what you're saying there, absolutely. The thing that always flashes in my mind when I hear saying, oh, this is a voluntary best practices document, and even the initial document grounding this framework had that wonderful line in it that may be used for future policy development, you know. So we still have to be very careful and how it would interplay even in future with any registry agreement. So that is always a thought in the back of my mind anyway. But that wasn't my point. that was an add-on. My next point is just with regards to the framework, and maybe Nick can talk to this as well. The discussions that we'd had previously about the hierarchy, I mean, this was specifically with regards to notifications that we receive from law enforcement. And this is some of the details which I think personally are perhaps a bit lacking as well, that these timelines were considered and envisaged with regards to requests specifically from law enforcement that were verifiable law enforcement, that were local law enforcement, and, you know, language such as that is not currently in this draft. I think we need to draw a separate delineation as well from those reports that we receive from non-law enforcement agencies, because again, timelines, yes, for things, I think we've all come to agreement that for things such as child exploitation, you know, anybody is going to react quickly to that. But if for other more nuanced type security threats, there is a lot of investigation that may not have the same level of, you know, evidence, may not have the same level of severity, that it will be up to the individual registry at the end of the day, even if it ultimately falls into one of these particular categories. These categories were only meant for the law enforcement report. So I think that needs to be a little bit clearer, well, actually needs to be very much clearer in that. So perhaps we could look at that too.
Thank you, Alan. Jim, go ahead.
Thank you, Jim Galvin, from Phileas for the Record. I have a question which I think speaks to one of the issues that we're sort of struggling with here. Somewhere there needs to exist a filter as to, you know, what is a security incident that we're going to deal with or not. So to make this concrete, this is a framework for dealing with security threats and security incidents. Well, does this framework come into execution when we know we're dealing with a security incident, or does it come into execution when any kind of notification comes in? So the particular distinction I'm making, I'll use content evaluation and content review as a good canonical example here. I've been thinking of this framework as this is what it looks like for your abuse team. And in fact, it is invoked and comes into action whenever any kind of notification comes in, regardless of who it's from or anything else, coming into your abuse email address, you know, phone call, whatever, law enforcement, court orders, you know, this is the entry point. And in that context, a Category 3 of other makes sense to me, Because then if somebody tries to toss in any kind of content filtering thing, it falls into that category. You know, somewhere down the road, it'll eventually make its way up on my to-do list, and I'll say, oh, content filtering? I'm not doing that. Never mind. And I'll toss it out and probably respond in some way and say, sorry, you lose, to whoever made the request. You know, so that's one way to approach this. Alternatively, we can be having discussions here about whether content filtering requests ever come in the front end. And, you know, then, of course, there needs to be some process on the other side which is going to prevent them from getting there. And in that sense, then I would understand that Category 3 needs to be much more carefully defined, because we're only trying to define the things we're going to act on. Now, I actually don't like that option in any case, because my feeling is security threats and incidents evolve with time. So even if we prefer that latter position of content requests should never come in the front door, as opposed to having a possible action that says I'm simply not going to react to them when they come in, because I know I'm going to get them from somebody somewhere along the way, I like the preferred action of a catch-all third Category 3, because security incidents evolve over time, and a framework should be something which we're either going to have to change it over time, or perhaps it has a way to, you know, work within whatever happens as the Internet, you know, evolves and innovates and progresses. So what I want is a Category 3, and I want a response section that says, you know, first step is to decide and agree on what category something's in by, with whoever the category notification came from. And then the second thing is, once I decide what it is, I'm going to execute some set of procedures based on whatever that is, and I'm going to act on it appropriately, including if it's a, you know, content filtering request, not doing anything. So, again, my question is, when does this framework get invoked? Is it the overarching filter of everything, or is it intended to only be responding to particular types of notifications? Thank you.
Maxine, do you want to comment?
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. I have a question to Krista. Do we expect public comments for this document, and if we expect, for what reason? What is going to be done with it? Thanks.
Thanks, Maxine. Yes, this document, this is Krista, everybody, from ICANN staff. Yeah, the document will go for public comment, and the reason is that was the directive from the NGPC. So I don't remember I don't have the resolution in front of me, so I don't remember the exact words, but basically, the NGPC directed us to work with the community to come up with this, and specifically to work with the GAC. So the way we've approached this from the beginning is to come up with the draft by working with the affected parties, which is the contracted parties and the GAC. The GAC appointed the PSWG sort of as their representatives here. And I know we also have GAC members that join in. So the idea is to work with the two most affected parties, and particularly the GAC because of the MGPC resolution, and then the community part comes from public comment, which, again, the NGPC said to also work with the community.
Could you advise us what next steps are going to be? Because there are no public comments for simple things. And most probably it will end up in some report on the board's table, and so far it could be a policy earlier than we expect. What is the next step up the public comments? Thanks.
So public comment is a funny thing. It sort of depends on what's in the public comment, but normally, because we don't know what we don't know, but normally we publish for public comment. There's a report that comes out afterwards. Depending on what's in the public comments, the framework can possibly be published after that. It might need to be further revised. Depending on the substance of the further revisions, if that were to happen, that could go for public comment again. As far as the board piece, I don't I don't know about that. We haven't really even talked about that bit, so we should probably start thinking about that. We would, at a minimum, we would advise the board of it, because since they, even though the NGPC isn't in existence, it's still a board action, and we would want to make sure the board knew that we completed the work they directed us to complete. So at a minimum, they'd be advised. And then as far as policy goes, I mean, nothing can become policy without a PDP, as far as I know. So just because something ends up on the board's table doesn't make it policy. It's just for, you know, board review or what have you.
Okay.
Thanks, Maxine.
Chris, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to thank Krista for her earlier comments and clarifications that this is a voluntary best practices document. And one of the topics that we've been discussing in the registry stakeholder group is that this is one of, I just wanted to make a comment and ensure that this is one of the reasons that we're suggesting that registry policies should prevail before taking, should lead before taking any action on a domain name. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Anyone else?
Hey, Dennis, it's Krista. I wanted to come back to Jim Galvin's question, if we can.
Go ahead.
I thought that was a really good question, Jim, about when does when do people think the framework starts? And I don't know. I haven't been to all of these meetings, so maybe it's been discussed and I'm not aware of it. But I'm kind of curious to see, Dennis, if maybe we can get a sense from the group. I think Jim sort of – there might be more than two options, but he sort of – his question sort of had two places where this starts. One is when a complaint comes in, and one is when I think how you put it, Jim, I might mess up the words, but when it becomes an actual security threat. I think it'd be interesting to get a sense from the group when people think that this should be effective, to see if we're all on the same page.
Anybody want to speak up? You can also chat your opinion on this.
Maybe we could even just do a show of hands in the Adobe or.
Go ahead, Maxime.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
Maxime, also for the record, Chris, one of the reasons for the different levels of security threats is that formally we have obligations before registrars and registrants via the contract with the registrars. And if we break something, and there were not enough reason to do so, we're formally just liable for damage to their business, et cetera, et cetera. So it's one of the reasons we need some reasonable thresholds, and we'd like sometimes to avoid being the party which decides something, because in some jurisdictions we don't have right to actually say that something is a crime. It's for law enforcement and court and maybe General Attorney Office. Thanks.
Anyone else? Go ahead, Jim.
So thank you, Jim Galvin, for the record. I want to respond to Maxim's question that he just had, and also to the question that he had there in the chat room. You know, he happens in a situation where anti-abuse email is subscribed to some spam scheme. Do we have to investigate it all? What's important to me in his process, we do often find ourselves sort of digging into the details here, but to the extent this is a framework, I think the answer to your question, Maxim, is, you know, it's covered by the framework. I'm imagining the framework overall is as, you know, it's got these categories. Something falls into a category. And if something falls into category three, which I'm going to go with my model of that's, you know, a catch-all category, then, you know, a registry has to respond to it in an appropriate way. And appropriate is guided by a number of things I believe we're all in agreement about. You know, one of which is that certainly a registry is the sole arbiter in what it will and will not do. A registry, you know, is only going to do things that it believes it can do and are within its, you know, legal and liability framework or whatever that happens to be. And three, a registry is going to do whatever due diligence, you know, it thinks it can and should do in order to protect itself, and justify, I guess is perhaps the word, or at least to support whatever action it wants to take. It's going to have whatever set of policies and procedures that it has in terms of service and, you know, for example, a detailed suggestion is, you know, even a relationship with registrars. Sometimes an appropriate response to a request is, oh, let's just delegate this to somebody else. And the typical logical delegation is to a registrar. You might give them a first cut at trying to deal with it rather than you, even though the request might have come into you. I believe that all these edge cases that we have all, you know, we bring up from time to time and talk about in this discussion are covered, you know, by that catch-all case. And, you know, we have to find the right words so that we're all satisfied. But I think we're all in agreement in principle that, you know, the registry ultimately decides what it's going to do, when it's going to do it, and how it's going to do it. And it does that in whatever way works for that registry. And we just, you know, need some words in black and white that sort of say that and satisfy all of us that we're covered. So, anyway, thank you.
Go ahead, Alan.
Great. Thank you, Alan Woods, Right Side Registry. I suppose, actually, Jim just really made his question was fantastic because it got me thinking, and I was thinking, have we just gotten so bogged down in these key areas of your back and forth between the PSWG, have we kind of lost the run of ourselves? And so I went back to the document itself and at the very beginning where we actually set out the scope. The scope of this document and following on the words of the NGPC resolution is only limited to responses to identified security threats as identified via the technical analysis that we are required under, you know, within. So, and also, one of the scopes we put down was that how we would respond, and if necessary, how we would bring other people in. And it seems to have flipped somewhat, where we're now saying, well, when people ask us specifically, when people report to us specifically, how do we respond to that? And, I mean, a pure application of reading the scope and just taking that moment to, I suppose, come out of this in-depth conversation and going into the pure scope, that's actually even not in it anymore. It was a bit of an eye-opener, so thank you, Jim, for opening the eyes a bit on that and bringing right back to, you know, the purpose of what this was. But I think it's a very, very valid question and it might help us move forward, in fact.
Thank you, Alan. If there aren't any more questions, I'd like to reserve a few minutes for logistics. Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Yes. This is a general question, as I noticed that a colleague had forwarded to me a draft advisory that ICANN plans to distribute in and around October 10th on Spec 11, and I was wondering, how does that advisory relate to the best practices? Thank you.
I can take that one, Dennis. It's Chris Papik from staff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Chris, I was, as I was trying to say earlier, the contract is separate from the framework. And this, what we're talking about here is the framework, voluntary best practices framework. The advisory you're referring to is, that's also an effort that's been underway for some time. We've been working with a small set of the registries to get that drafted. But basically, so again, separate from this framework project, the language in Spec 11, section in Specification 11, Section 3B of the Registry Agreement says again, paraphrasing, that registries will periodically monitor for security threats. They'll keep statistical analysis reports, and if ICANN asks for those reports, they'll supply them. We've gotten, ever since we launched, and this is as the new GTLD base agreement, we've been getting inquiries ever since we started signing contracts a while back about what does periodic mean, what should be in the statistical analysis, et cetera. And what we've told people over that period of time is, you know, we'll evaluate those on a case-by-case basis, and, you know, when should compliance or ICANN come ask for it, you know, we'll get the details then and we can have a discussion. There was a lot of registries that didn't really like that response. They wanted us to give them something that they could just go implement. So what that advisory is one way of implementing this analysis and this reporting to meet the requirements of specification 11.3b. It's not the only way. People can continue what they're doing. They can, you know, come up with their own processes, but it's a non-mandatory advisory, just saying that, hey, if you do it this way, you know, it from ICANN's perspective, it would meet the requirements of specification 11.3b.
Krista, thanks. Just a follow-up question, because, you know, some of the wording in here, it says, is specific. It says registry operators must conduct analysis and be able to report the data collected as frequently as needed, but no less frequently than on a monthly basis. So that's different from the contract language of periodic, right?
Right. So as I said, it's one way that a registry can conduct this analysis. So if a registry were conducting it to the letter of the advisory, compliance would say, great, thanks. You know, they would ask for the information. The registry would supply it. It would match what's in the advisory. It'd be like, okay, great, thanks. There are other ways that people can do it, and it doesn't mean that they're out of compliance. This is just basically providing, for those who want to use it, a set of instructions that they can follow. There's a number of registries out there who just want to do what they're supposed to do and don't, like, want to think about it. You know, like, they have a toe in the registry business, or – you know, they're halfway in or whatever. And so rather than them inventing the wheel, they're looking for us to say, hey, you know, here's a way that you could do it. So it's specific to anyone who's following the advisory. But if you're following something else, what would happen is the same thing that happens today. If compliance were to ask you for these reports or you were to be subject to an audit, it would be evaluated on the case-by-case basis that we're evaluating those on today.
Okay. So this is not – This advisory is not prescriptive, as you're saying.
It does not apply to every registry. It only applies to a registry that wants to use it.
Okay. Thank you very much for the clarification.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Alan, go ahead. We have 3 minutes left.
Fair enough. I'm very quick enough. Mm-hmm. I appreciate absolutely what Chris is saying there and the questions. I just would like to say that, you know, the advisory, I'm sure, is going to be discussed in many other forums. This document comes after all events of the advisory have taken place, and we have taken that into account at the very beginning of the document as well, where we discuss about things such as phase one and receiving data, and we actually, in the current draft of this document, there is a reference to the advisory saying that, you know, one should refer to that in, you know, if you wish to look to the advisory to see how you receive data and how you get the technical analysis or how you achieve the technical analysis. But this comes in after all that has been said and done. But as I said, I'd love to talk more about the advisory, but I think there's other forums that we will be having that conversation in as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. So we need to get this meeting to a close. And just quick logistics-wise, we are going to have to set up new meetings for the October. And we will, I think Aishiba will send out meeting invites, and we will use the new rooms for the October, starting October. And we'll make sure the we have enough IT support to make sure everything is working before we join the meeting next week. So the reminder is we are going to meet again next week and for the following few weeks to make good progress that we're making here. And the request, the request should be for PSWG now, having listened to the registry. Nick, would you mind going back and talking to Bobby and talk about what the PSWG will do and maybe take some inputs? And Alan, I don't know what you would like to do on your side, continue feedback in writing to the PSWG, perhaps? I'd like to hear from you, the co-leaders here.
Shall I go, Alan? Thanks very much. I've made a note of all the feedback that has been received on the call today, and thank you very much for that. And I would urge everyone as well to continue to post feedback to the mailing list as well, because it all helps. So I've made a note of the feedback, and I'll be taking this back into the PSWG, and as we see fit, we'll provide some further feedback to yourselves ahead of next week's call.
Perfect. From my point of view, I think what's best for the registries and the registries listening, the feedback that was given today, I think Nick is taking a good note and he can bring that back. But I do think that we should continue having the discussion in our own forum. And then if we can put together and agree when we want to pass that feedback straight on to the PSWG as opposed to having to wait for the call, I think I'd be very supportive of ensuring that there's a good flow of information that way. So if we can look to using our mailing list, letting us, agree on those things we should pass the PSWG after hashing it out between ourselves, I think that would add greatly as well. So let's please continue on that way.
Yeah, you're certainly right there, Alan. I think that's definitely the best approach, and it might help us to sort of expedite some of these sort of discussions in the run-up to when we will get together on the call.
Perfect.
Perfect. Thank you, everyone, for today's call. We will continue the discussion and make progress on the draft on the online, and we will meet again next week in our new room. Crystal is typing. Do you want me to wait for you to finish type something on your chat? Stop? Okay, then. I'll stop the recording. Thank you, everyone. See you next week.